What's going on, world? This is the Primetime Angles radio show hosted by your boy, the Primetime Capper Pop DiBiase, in a somewhat of a special edition and everything today. I know my show usually runs Thursdays through Monday live, but I felt like we need to start doing this maybe on a daily basis and everything like that. So when I'm not just on the radio and things like that, I do want to make sure that I am delivering you guys the best information in all of sports and sports betting. You know, pretty much I'm a trender, as I can see, because now today the topic is with Russell Westbrook. He needs to be moved to the two guard. They need to have more of a ball handler. We did say this on my last show and everything. So pretty much it's funny that this cracks me up. Also, they have a show where they say, put your money where your mouth is. And that everybody knows that since 2015, when I started my original show, CapCast, the premier sports betting show, that was actually a topic on the show, put your money where your mouth is, where we had the dog bet, where we had the primetime game of the day, the best bet of the day, you know, all those things. That will return soon. Don't worry, that will be back. I'm working on that as well, too. It's just that I got to get time, man. We got everything in the fold right now. There's a lot of things going on. Boxing wise and things of that nature. I'm actually covering two fights in the next 2 weeks, and hopefully I'll make it to Brooklyn on the 18th of May. And then we're also looking at the 1st of June for Anthony Joshua's fight against an opponent to be determined. Reason being is because Big Baby Miller, a guy that I was kind of high on, tested positive for steroids, an EPO, and something else that you can't have in your body while you're, you know, about to be in the biggest boxing match of your life. So he actually failed the drug test 3 times. And the first time he said that, you know, they came and they gave him the test and he was clean, he was good. But you can't ever know if you're clean or good on a test 2 hours after the fact. So they put sample A, sample B, everything came back to the sample being dirty. Then they tested him again on the, hey, we might have made a mistake. And then EPO shows up in his system. So pretty much he has become the laughing stock of all of boxing. And he has pretty much put his promotion in a bad spot with his behavior and him not being honest about what occurred. So it's given boxing kind of another black eye, but not really, though. Because at the end of the day, everybody just wants the Wilder Joshua fight anyway. It doesn't matter who they fight for now. That it does not interest the public enough. What's going to interest the public is when these two decide to get in the ring and fight each other as the best two heavyweights on the planet. Yes, I know some will argue and say Tyson Fury is in that group as well too, but we saw what happened in LA. They gave Tyson Fury the opportunity to get up when most guys would have called the fight off. But since it was such a good fight and it was going such in the favor of Fury, the ref felt like he did the right thing by giving Fury a chance to get up. But a lot of us have seen the tape and it looks like as if it was 13 seconds that elapsed and it's 10 seconds on a countout. So, you know, we can all sit here and go back and forth about it. But I always thought that the draw was the best decision just to keep everybody happy, because a lot of people felt like Wilder won just because the 2 knockouts that he had. I felt like he won too because I didn't see the same performance that everybody else saw. I know that it was a kind of a boring match for a heavyweight fight, but I felt like it was more of Tyson Fury trying to hold off the power that was coming from Deontay. And Deontay did win rounds that they didn't give him. I mean, in the public. So you have to understand, judges see the fight in a different way than fans do. Some analysts see fights in a different way. It's all opinions. So at the end of the day, the only opinions that matter are those 3 judges. And I always say to myself, if one judge picks one guy, the other judge picks the other guy, and then the judge who calls it a draw can't pick anybody, then it's the judge who called it a draw's fault. Because he couldn't decide. He didn't see it the same way that you saw it. He didn't see it the same way that I saw it. He saw it the way that he saw it. So he has it as a draw. And it's funny because a lot of boxing matches that I've been a part of over the last few months, did end in draws when you just don't know where to go. And you have to understand, Lennox Lewis suffered the same situation when he fought Evander Holyfield. A lot of people thought, yeah, he beat Holyfield. He beat him down. He had a great effort against him in the first one, but he didn't really necessarily beat him down. What he did was he controlled the fight, but it just wasn't enough for the judges because they felt as if Holyfield was in the fight. So this made one of the most controversial draws you'll ever see in a boxing match. So when it all comes down to it, you have to understand that it's a money game being played, and you have to go where the money is. And the money is in Wilder Joshua. And really, Joshua would get the top billing because he does have majority of the belts in the heavyweight division. And you know, he's just trying to unify. He has the IBF title, the WBO title, and the WBA title. But the most coveted of them all belongs to Deontay Wilder, which is the WBC crown. So this puts us in a predicament, and hopefully we'll see both of these fighters on May 4th in Las Vegas during the Canelo week, because it seems like that might be brewing. I'm not saying that these two will be there, but I'm most definitely thinking that Anthony Joshua will be there because he does fight on his own, and you know, he wants to keep selling that fight and keep his face out there and show the people that, you know, he is here. But I know he has training to do as well over in England too. So we'll see. I would love to see both of those guys show up, and I know it will garner a lot of attention from the fan, from all the fans out there and everything. Now, my breakdown of the Danny Garcia, Adrian Granados fight. Danny Garcia was very impressive, and I feel like he deserves a rematch with either Thurman or Porter down the road. Now, from what I'm hearing right now, is Porter and Spence is going to be finalized soon. Really, it's going to be Spence and Porter. I'm betting that the fight will be in Las Vegas, not Texas this time around. Vegas just seems like a better venue for this, and it gives the fans on the West Coast an opportunity to go ahead and watch Errol Spence in the mecca of all boxing. I know that they said the Garden is the mecca of all boxing, but boxing lives in Las Vegas, man. Seriously, boxing, there's boxing gyms all over the city. Boxing has made that city a whole lot of money, and I feel like this is really good for Spence to fight on a big card as the headliner in Las Vegas. And I think that his camp would agree with that too, because Las Vegas is a very important place to Errol as well too. That's where he got a lot of his, you know, rounds in with the great Floyd Mayweather, you know, because he did spar with Floyd, and he learned a lot from Floyd. And Floyd had already, you know, gave him the cosign that he would be the next up. And so I feel like him coming to Las Vegas would be a great little homecoming, in a sense, to show everybody, hey, you know, I'm everywhere. Errol Spence is loved everywhere. So Errol Spence, Sean Porter, sounds like it's happening. And also Thurman Pacquiao looks to be happening as well too. They're saying that Las Vegas will be the location for it. I'm thinking that maybe that fight would be better off in Brooklyn, but we'll see how it goes though. It's a pay-per-view event, so if it's on pay-per-view, they like to be in Vegas. So there it is. There goes a little bit of an update for you coming up with the boxing and everything like that on big boxing matches in the most coveted division of them all right now, which is the welterweight division, 147. Even though we are waiting on this huge heavyweight matchup to bring boxing back all the way, because we have a great talent pool of boxers. We got promotions that are doing things that are very friendly towards social media, the internet, things like that. So boxing can still sell tickets, and so you can get your butt to the arena and, you know, watch a fight. So that's something that I do really like to see, but at this point right now, they got to make the big fights. After we get done with Spence and Porter, hopefully they go get Spence Thurman. If Thurman is able to defeat Manny Pacquiao, if that fight is to happen, then he can go ahead and get Bud Crawford, I think, sometime in mid-2020. But I would love to see those guys fight at the start of 2020, because I feel like that's the best fight right now to be made, is Spence and Crawford. other than making the Joshua Wilder fight. And I know I've said this over four times, but I just want you guys to hear me. This is what's needed in boxing, and hopefully this fight will happen. And so pretty much that's where we're going with this. Now, how I'm feeling, I feel like it's going to be a pretty predictable NBA playoffs. We've found ourselves in a position now where most of these teams are wrapping it up pretty early. Like last night, we had the Thunder lose their series 4-1. And I had the Thunder actually winning this series 4-3. I believed in the Blazers. I liked the Blazers. It was hard because I actually had the Blazers circled. But then I said, no. Westbrook and Paul George, second year around together, they'll figure it out. Once again, they were playing 2-on-5. And then when it came down to it, Westbrook kind of made a selfish move. But it's not really a selfish move when you're an MVP and you're holding the ball 80% of the time. It's kind of expected. And what happened was is that it just didn't fall through. And so then Dame Lillard comes down and hits a 40-foot shot. He was literally at the Moda Arena sign and throws it up. Like, he was almost at the Blazers logo. Threw it up, wins the game, walks off, waves to the Thunder. Bye-bye. And this has became the moment of the playoffs at this moment. And now Dame Lillard is everybody's favorite point guard, everybody's favorite clutch shooter. You know, Dame Lillard been here. Dame Lillard has been doing these things for years. Only thing is that he plays for the Blazers. And he's never really had anybody to be a co-partner with. Even though he did have LaMarcus Aldridge very early in his career. And I always say that LaMarcus Aldridge made a bonehead decision leaving Portland, knowing that he could have got paid the most dollars for staying in Portland. And he wound up going over to San Antonio. And he's happy, but they're not going to the places that they promised that they were going to go to. Now you're there. Tim Duncan's gone. Ginobili's gone. Tony Parker's gone. Kawhi Leonard's gone. And it's like, okay, I didn't sign up for this. But now he gets to lead the Spurs. He gets to play up under Pop. And he is the bona fide leader of the team now. He is their marquee player. But I think it would have been much better for him, and he would have way more attention and way more props in this league if he would have just stuck with Dame Lillard. Because him and Dame Lillard had a Shaq-Kobe combination, you know, and it was fun to watch. They were really good together, and I feel like now both players are in total need of each other. But Dame is all right. Dame is doing his thing, and Dame is just took everything, and he just rolls with it. He loves playing for the Blazers. You haven't heard him talk one time about leaving the Blazers. He just wanted to make sure his contract was right. But he's very dedicated to the community out there. He did play basketball at Weber State in Utah. So he's a Northwest guy, man. He's all over the place up there. So, and he's from Oakland. And Oakland guys have a lot of loyalty to things that have loyalty to them. So he's just going on with the adage of who he is. And he's very committed to this team because he was drafted fourth by the Blazers out of a small college. So they believed in him from day one that he was one of the top players in the NBA draft and would be one of the top players in the NBA at some point of his career. And he's actually went ahead and answered all those questions. So shouts out to Dame Lillard for a great shot last night. He hit the same type of shot years ago against the Rockets. It was a great shot that he hit. He jumped on top of the scorer's table afterwards and everything. And it was just a beautiful moment for him as well, too. Pardon me. You know, still trying to beat these little sinuses and this little cold, man. How you got a cold in the springtime? But it is what it is. But that's how it shakes out, though. That was a great game. Now they're questioning Westbrook a little bit. I know I started off the show talking about that. It's like, damn, Poppy jumping all over the place. But you know, let's go back to that real quick. Westbrook kind of was playing a little bit reckless because he wanted to keep up with Dame. And this wound up being something that was not a good for the Thunder. and wound up getting them out the playoffs a lot earlier than they expected. You know, they have a lot of things in place for the future, you know, draft-wise, things like that. But I really do think that they need to take a long look in the mirror and figure out how they can get some really good supporting players around Westbrook and George, because they can't do it everything. But what Westbrook really needs is they need a veteran point guard, say like his former teammate, Darren Collison, to come step in, help out a little bit, and, you know, kind of keep Russell tamed a little bit. And I would love to see the Thunder try to attempt to get Kevin Love. Now, if you were to throw Kevin Love in there with Westbrook, I think that would make him a whole lot more comfortable. Same thing with Paul George. And I think right now, in the situation that Cleveland's in, if you're an NBA GM, you would be wanting to pick up that phone and see if you can get something going for Kevin Love. I know you're going to have to give up a little bit to get him, because now he is the man on the Cavs, but that's only for so long. They're still trying to develop the rookie who's there, who people had some criticism about, but I think the kid is good. I think that he's a special player. I thought he was better than Trae Young coming out of college, and that showed too when they played their one-on-one game. And I just think that the kid's a gamer, and you just got to take your time. You got to be patient with them, you know, because these kids are 19 years old. They're in the NBA. They finally get to wear that association jersey. They finally get to get that association paycheck, so they're excited. And when they're able to do well and be the same player that they've been their whole lives, it's hard for them to compute what it is to be an actual professional. You know what I mean? So, you know, it takes time. I think that the kid will be fine, you know. And Colin Sexton is a hell of a player, and I like what I see. And if the Cavs were a little bit better, he might have been in consideration for Rookie of the Year. I felt like he did some big things to start the season off, you know. And funny thing is, it seemed like he really had a vendetta with the Lakers. It's like they had a crazy summer league game that the Cavs lost, and then he came to LA and had a crazy game at Staples, and they upset the Lakers. But this is without LeBron, you know, all that stuff. So pretty much this is a player that you need to watch out for. He has a Dame Lillard chip on his shoulder, in a sense, but he didn't go to a small college, but he went to a college that's not well known for bringing out great hoop players. That's the whole thing, other than Robert Horry. So sorry about that. I don't mean to be all phlegmy, but you know, it is what it is. You got to get it out so you can talk a little bit. So back to the playoffs, though. Back to the East. We got the Sixers and the Nets. I knew that the Sixers would probably go ahead and dominate the Nets last night. Nets did what they could. They won the first game of the series. You know, they got us a good dog bet to start the playoffs off. And, you know, the Nets were good for that all season long, and I appreciate them for that. And I did like what they said, and I said this a few weeks back, that Brooklyn could be a free agent destination. They got a team with no ego. They got a great coach, and they're in Brooklyn. They're not in Manhattan. They don't have to have the same pressures as the Knicks. The Nets can just go up under the radar and just win basketball games. Now, what if they were able to have a top four team in the East? Man, Brooklyn would go crazy. The world will go crazy. It would just be like having the Dodgers back in town, you know. But they are like the old Brooklyn Dodgers of the NBA, in a sense. You know, sometimes before the Dodgers got really good, you know, they would get forgotten about in the fold and everything like that, you know, being in New York City with the Yankees. But I'm feeling like you're starting to get that. You can get that same buzz, that same momentum that you had with them for years. So I really do like the fact that Brooklyn is back on the rise and that they do have an opportunity to put together a really good team. And can we say finals maybe in the next few years or so, if they're able to keep D'Angelo Russell and he keeps rising to the potential that we thought that he would be at by this time in Los Angeles? But people have to understand, the best thing for D'Angelo Russell and the best thing for the Lakers was for them to separate. D'Angelo Russell was never going to be this good on the Lakers. He needed a coach that had some patience to him, but had some discipline to him, but knew how to speak to him as well, too. It seemed like there was a big disconnect with D'Angelo Russell. And D'Angelo Russell, you guys have to understand the guy. I think he had three coaches in the 3 years he was with the Lakers, like the 2-3 years he was here with us. So, you know, because Byron, what, coached a season? It's a headache when you start looking at the Lakers coaching situation since Phil Jackson left the last time. It's just a headache, you know, and it's in all senses of the word, man, seriously. So I don't even want to get into that part that extensively because, you know, the coaches were just lame ducks for the last few years, and Luke Walton was seen as somewhat of a savior because he was a part of those last two finals teams. He's a favorite of Kobe, a favorite of the Buss family. You know, everything should work out. And then it didn't work out because they were putting pretty much all the pressure on Luke once the Lakers lost the game. But there were questionable things that he did in the game coaching wise. But, you know, that's coaching. Sometimes you might overdo it. And Luke overdid it a few too many times. But I really don't think that he left on his own accord. He left because it was the best thing to do. It was what was asked to do. And I think that the Lakers would have been a better job for him if he would have had a little bit more seasoning as a head coach somewhere. Now he gets to restart everything in Sacramento, hopefully, because what occurred the other day is Kelly Tennant, a former employee of Spectrum Sports in Los Angeles, she used to cover a lot of the Dodger games and everything like that, came out and she filed a lawsuit against Luke, and this might be detrimental to moving forward with the Kings, because, you know, in the world that we live in today, you just can't look past these things. So they're at a state right now where we kind of don't know if Luke Walton's going to be the head coach of the Kings, but I think all in all, at the end of the day, it probably will work out and he'll stay the head coach of the Kings. And I feel like this is a perfect fit for him because now he gets Marvin Bagley, gets DeAndre Fox, he gets a bevy of young players that are real hungry, but then they don't have to play with the bright lights and stars of Hollywood. You know, they don't have a LeBron James sitting over there, you know, being the assistant coach. Now Luke Walton can actually sit up there and coach with no pressure. And he has a team that's on the brink of being a really good team. So all in all, they are a perfect fit for each other, I feel. And Vlade Divac was just being kind of deceptive and taking, you know, Laker, just picking up old Lakers, you know, pretty much. It's almost like a revenge tour for Vlade. Like, oh, you play for the Lakers, come to me. You coach for the Lakers, come to me. So in that all senses of the word, you know, the Kings are a team to look out for. And if Luke is able to stay around, he could be the one that helps fixes this whole thing. So good luck to Luke, and pretty much I wish him well. The Lakers coaching situation, though, is different, and we're going to get into that in a minute, but we're going to keep talking about these playoffs right now. So there you go. The Sixers win it 122-100 over the Nets. The Nets, awesome team. I loved y'all, man. You guys were gritty, grimy, and you guys did what you had to do. You guys were dog of the day special for me this year. You guys came through. You know, it could be plus 370. Nets came through. So, Nets, thank you, man. I really, really appreciated the season. You guys were great. Now, for the teams that got swept, come on, Detroit. Detroit was absolutely awful throughout this whole play. I've never seen a team just absolutely just get blown out every single game. And they were up 5 in game 4 and still lost by almost 30. Was this a team that had no business being in the playoffs? Yes. But the way that the East is set up, there is no choice. Detroit won enough games in the last 6 weeks of the season to get there. You know, we would have loved to see Charlotte, a team that would have been able to try. You know, they've given Milwaukee troubles. And, you know, Kemba Walker is no slouch. You know, Kemba Walker's going to win a game or two. But, you know, it was just bad. You know, so I'm thinking to myself, is there any way that Blake Griffin can get out of town anytime soon? You know, Lakers, you might want to look at this option because Blake, you don't have to give up much to get Blake. You know, and I think that maybe if you're a team that's on a level of trying to win a championship, you might want to give that a look. I know he's hurt a lot, but still, with him being on one leg and him still being able to lead this mediocre team to the playoffs, that's something special, man. And it's funny, they made a trade with the Lakers during the season with sending one of their best players, Reggie Bullock, to the Lakers in an idea that they may not make the playoffs, and they wind up making the playoffs. They pulled off what the Clippers did. And the Clippers, they play tonight. It looks like their season's going to be over as well, too, tonight. They're 3-1 down in Oakland. It should be 4-0 because they came back from a 31-point lead, the miracle game, you know, because the Warriors went to sleep. But the Warriors aren't going to sleep anymore. So pretty much, I think this game will be over by halftime, to be dead honest with you. But the Warriors are going to keep pounding it out. The Warriors are going to try to get 130, 140 tonight. I mean, 230, 240 tonight, at least. You know, I'm sorry. 130, 140 in points total. I'm over here thinking about the over because that's the play for tonight for clients and everything. So over 233, if you're one of my guys, the Primetime Sports Investors. So there it is right there. So you guys will hear about that. Hopefully everything works out. And if you guys are able to hear this before the game tips off, there goes a good play for you right there. So I think that that series is definitely over. And I also think that the Jazz series, the Jazz got their honorary win in Utah. You're never going to beat them back-to-back in Utah unless you got a super, super team. And that's what occurred when they played the Rockets. The Rockets were able to pull out game three. And then they got... Then the Jazz totally ran away with a game four. So it gives us the idea, hey, it could have been 2-2. But this series is over. I think that the Rockets start off very hot to begin the game. They'll hit a... You know, they'll be in the groove. They're going to be playing some good defense. And then, boom, there it is. They went by 15 or more. That's how I'm feeling here. They got a 9-point spread on them. They're giving 9. So I think that they win by double digits tonight. I just really feel that's going to occur. And so that's where I'm going. That's what I'm rocking with in that game tonight. And see, the show is going right up as soon as I get done. So pretty much you guys can't say that I didn't give you anything today, okay? So there it is. I love Rockets today as well, too. And I'm just showing a little bit of love because it's my birthday tomorrow. So that's another client play that we're on today as well, too. So how we're seeing the playoffs kind of shake out a little bit now. We got the East is set. That is set. The Raptors took care of their business yesterday as well, too. They won by 19. Even though, you know, they lost the first game in the series, but that was because you had Orlando, who was a nice upstart. They had just won the Southeast Championship as well, too. First time in a decade. And, you know, they just pretty much played a great, great series for a team. Why am I saying great? They literally were trash the last four games, even though they played decent in game three. But game two and game four, they were absolutely awful. And yesterday, just forget about it. You know, the Raptors started off early and often, and the game was pretty much over at halftime. I'm saying this great because Orlando didn't have the expectations of really making the playoffs this year, let alone winning their division. So this team is a team on the rise. Next year, you'll see them in the top five of the East. Because with them just having a good season, they'll be able to attract a decent free agent to come down there and play, because they have a good team. You have to understand, the Magic have a lot of length, and that's going to prove to be their strength once that team gets it, you know. And I look forward to it, because we're starting to turn into an NBA now where most of these teams don't have a star. They got a few stars on the team. You know, you're not going to just run with one superstar. You love what the Clippers are doing. You love what the Nets are doing. You love what the Magic are doing. These teams made the playoffs with no significant superstar. So that goes to show you, you don't need Superman to get to where you need to get to, you know. And you need what the Boston Celtics had when they had their title run. Awesome overall team. And that's what I'm seeing here in the NBA right now. So we have the East set up, okay? And me and Jeff are going to get more into that Thursday night, talk a little bit more about that, because we don't start that until this weekend. But, you know, you got the Celtics and the Bucks, and the Bucks do have the Bucks hold the home court advantage. So if we go seven, the game seven will be in Milwaukee. And then we got the Raptors and the Sixers, and the Raptors have the Sixers number. And with Joel B being 50-50 every single game, this is not a good recipe for the Sixers moving forward. But the Sixers probably have the most aggressive offense in the Final Four of the East. So they have an offense that can go ahead and really, really, you know, put some points on the board. Regardless if Embiid is in there or not, they still got Jimmy Butler. They still got Ben Simmons. Hey, they still got Tobias Harris as well, too. When you look at it, the Sixers should be playing the Warriors in June, but they're still young and they still have a lot of questions and they still get distracted fairly easily. And all it takes is just a little bit of trash talk and they're out of their element. So, you know, the Sixers are going to learn, man, but it's much better than the trust the process years where they literally were just bad basketball on bad basketball. This is a relief to a lot of Sixers fans. So there it is. Sixers, I'm not going to say you're in trouble, but you guys got to get together and you got to get together now. Okay? Because the Raptors are like the Spurs North, but without winning championships. They have a star, Kawhi Leonard, but they have a overall great team. The chemistry is there, and they are looking like the team that will be getting to the finals. I know I'm being biased because I did choose the Raptors to make it to the finals this year. So I feel like they are still on that mission. I feel like that's still going to occur. So the East is going to be fun. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the West. We already talked about the Warriors should breeze through the Clippers, and then they will be playing the Rockets, who, if they're able to take care of the Jazz tonight. So that's going to be tough in itself. This will be pretty much the conference championship in the Western Conference. This is not a series that the Warriors should take lightly. I think the Rockets beat them 3 out of 4 this year. And they beat them twice in Oakland. Twice. Not once. Twice. So this goes to show you that they're in some trouble. Are they going to be able to hold Harden the whole game? And you got a healthy Chris Paul. And everybody said if Chris Paul would have played game 7, they would have won game 7. I don't like that stuff, though. I hate that type of foregone conclusion talk. It would have been helpful if Chris Paul was in game 7. But seriously, these guys had a 17-point lead in game 6 at the half and lost the game by 20 points. No, Chris Paul honestly was not going to make a difference. The Warriors were on a mission. They were the better team, and they won. But I think if they would have had Chris Paul in that game 6, they would have been able to take care of their business. They'd have been able to win that game because Chris Paul would have figured out a way to make them manage it, to make them slow down a little bit, to make them stop shooting threes. I swear, they threw up 20 missed threes in a row. I've never seen a team with that poor with that bad of shooting selection. It's just, that was just things that make you go, But that's because I was a defensive coach in my time when I was coaching hoops, so it always just kills me when a team makes it that easy for you to beat them, when they just want to keep jacking up threes. Well, that means that we're going to go very hard on our defensive rebounds today. That's all that means. That's all that means. So, where do we go from here? We go ahead and we look at a team that has been snake bitten twice. And the third time around might be the sweetest revenge of all. Everybody has the Warriors walking right to the title. They got them walking right to the championship. But it doesn't work like that in pro sports. You have to win the game before we hand you the trophy. And this right here is their biggest obstacle. in this playoff is getting past the Rockets, in my opinion. And I say this now, then they'll mess around and beat the Rockets 4-1. But I really, truly think that this is going to be one of those great classic series where the Warriors are going to have to dig deep to win this one. So you got to understand, the Rockets ain't got nothing to lose. They've already lost. They're not the ones with the expectations. The Warriors are. Last year, the Rockets had expectations because people felt like they should beat the Warriors. The Warriors' run is over. Harden is the MVP. There's no way that Harden should lose to the Warriors because he owns the Warriors, right? But in clutch situations, the Warriors own him. I question them getting rid of Trevor Ariza, who was their best defender. It seemed to be harmful early in the season, but once again, the Rockets were a team that just had to get into a groove, and then next thing you know, they go on a long home game, home winning streak that pretty much got them to the fourth seed when at one point in the year, they weren't even in the playoffs. But it wasn't like they weren't ever going to make the playoffs. So this team is now playing with some house money, and I'm just talking ahead of time. I don't know what's going to happen with the Jazz, but seriously, this series, that series is literally over, in my opinion. But the Jazz could always come back, but let's not think like that. Now, a series that could have went bad was this Portland series. Portland hitting that three last night was huge because all the momentum would have went back to OKC. OKC had a home game coming up, and they probably would have won that game. Then we get back to game seven. Now the pressure's on the Blazers, and the Blazers don't play that great with a whole lot of pressure on them. Last night was a game that they could win or they could lose because they're already up 3-1. But they knew that they had to seize the moment and take care of the Thunder right then and right there. So you have this team, they're the third seed, and Denver and San Antonio. This was always the toughest series. This series is literally like a 4-5 series, and the Jazz-Rockets series feels like a 2-7 series. It's like these seeds should be in other places, but this is how it shook out. This is how it works out. So that series is going to go 7, just like I predicted, because the Spurs should win that game tomorrow night. They're a 2.5-point favorite already, so that means that you can money line them tomorrow, and I think they still win by 10 points. And then we set up the game 7 in Denver, and then all bets are off. I got the Spurs winning the series, but you never know what can happen. Denver is playing very good basketball. It seems like they're able to answer the call when it's time to answer it, and that usually works out very well for a team that's on the rise, that's trying to advance in the playoffs. So be on the lookout. You know the Spurs are going to be a heavy, heavy play tomorrow night for a lot of us. But if you want to be sharp, I think that maybe if you just say, okay, Denver's going to end the series, then you got to bet there. You know what I mean? But I really do think that the Spurs are going to force a game 7. Because seriously, honestly, the TV networks need a game 7. Something they can talk about, something that they can just build on, build up with. You know, so it looks like the Rockets might be waiting a few more days for their opponent. Oh, well, not the Rockets. I'm sorry. The Blazers will be waiting a few more days for their opponent. And the Blazers do hope it's San Antonio because they've had San Antonio's number. And then they'll get the home court advantage in this series as well, too. And that should give them some more confidence as they move on, as they try to get to this conference final and either play the Rockets or the Warriors. So the Blazers look like they're in the driver's seat right now to get to the conference finals, to be dead honest with you. Regardless of who they play, Nuggets or Spurs, I feel like they can beat either one of those teams. But the Spurs are the better matchup for them moving forward because I think that the Spurs just don't have enough to beat the Blazers. They got enough to beat the Nuggets, though. The Nuggets are a team of above-average players that all have one goal, win the game. Once again, a team with no significant superstar. They're trying to create one in Jokic, or they're trying to create one in Jamal Murray. But it just doesn't matter. Just win basketball games. That's all you need to do. So that's my analyst for the NBA playoffs as today, as we go into tonight's games and everything and how I'm feeling for this week in the NBA. We'll have more talks about the NBA Thursday, though. I mean, tomorrow. I'm acting like Thursday is like 3 days away. But tomorrow on Pop Day, on DiBiase Day, which is my B-Day, man, I'll be 35 years old. I can't believe it. I'm glad to be here as well, too. So, man, it's a blessing, man. You guys have to understand that to even see the next year. You guys got to understand that, man, we are on borrowed time, in a sense. So you guys got to always be happy when you get to walk, when you get another year around the sun, you know. So I'm very happy about that. And then I got to go ahead and do this Easter fight this weekend over at the Cosmopolitan, you know. So that should be fun in itself as well, too. So this is going to be a nice little weekend of some partying and some things like that. I guess people will celebrate me, but I'm not too big on birthdays and things like that. I'm just happy to be here. That's all. All right. Now, baseball. Let's see, get a review of baseball. Let's see how we're doing in April, because we have April. This is the first month of the season, and I want to look at the standings now and see who's surprising people. Oh, and as soon as I open it up, I see the Tampa Bay Rays, 16-8 on the season, best record in all of baseball, and what they call the toughest division of all of baseball. They're actually 2.5 games ahead of the Yankees right now, who are 13-10, trying to figure it out. Then everybody else in the division has a losing record. Toronto 11-13, Boston, the world champs, 9-15, and the Orioles are 9-16, so they're not that far apart from each other. It's crazy, and they're still giving a minus 230. And it's funny because Baltimore actually won the last series between these two teams. It's crazy. Then Minnesota is sitting here atop the Central, 13-8 to start the season, 12-10 with the Indians and the Tigers. And then the White Sox are right where you thought they would be, 9-13. And Kansas City's awful, 7-17 this year, 7-17 to start the season. But hey, you can still maybe get the pennant. But you're going to have to be good for the next 4 or 5 months. You're going to have to be 500 or better. Then Seattle is atop the West. They're leading by a game and a half, actually, against the, not a game and a half, half a game against the Astros, who are 14-9. But the Astros already swept them this year as well, too. So there goes. Then Texas is 12-10, surprisingly. And Oakland's 13-13. And the woeful Angels are sitting down there at 9-15. To start the month. Man, once again, the Angels, they give the best player in baseball $430 million. That's Mike Trout. They got Ohtani, who's a legend in Japan. And then they have future Hall of Famer Albert Pujols, who a decade ago was literally, hitting-wise, was Mike Trout. If maybe better, and they still can't get this thing right. It's like they don't have the supporting players around them, they don't have the pitching, they don't have anything to advance this team to where they really, really need to be. And it just is bad for a player like Mike Trout, who's the best player in all of baseball, to really have to sit up here and deal with that. But it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it. They just have to improve as they go. They still have a chance. They're 9-15 early this season, but they can't fall that far behind because they're already 6 games back of the Mariners, who pretty much surprised everybody out the gate. The Mariners started the season off, I think, 13-2. So they've actually ran into their cold streak like about now-ish. As soon as they played the Astros and then they played the Indians well too, they had lost 5 out of 6. You know, going into that game 13-2, Nobody even talked about this, and that's what killed me. Now, if it was the Yankees or Red Sox or Dodgers, that would have been the talk of the town. And the Dodgers actually started off 8-2. Dodgers started off very well this season, but they're playing. The offense is awesome this year. The Dodgers 15-10 right now. Arizona's 13-11. San Diego's 13-11. And I know Padre fans are just over there. We got to make it to the wild card. Let me not get on Padre fans. I got too much love for San Diego, but you guys love affair with Manny Machado is hilarious, because that's kind of like how we was in LA the first month with them. And then we started seeing them do lazy stuff and things that you don't expect superstar players to do. And then we kind of got tired of it because we knew he was no Manny Ramirez. You know, Manny Ramirez is a absolute legend. You know, he could get you a key hit when it was time to get a hit. And he was so dialed in. Like, he really, really knew what pitches to hit, what pitches to pass on. Sometimes Manny would do things just freelancing and things like that, but it spoke to the Dodgers very well. Manny Machado sometimes was just up there. You know, the games where you needed him to be huge, he wasn't big. But I liked what he did. I just felt like you couldn't expect him to be Bryce Harper. You couldn't expect him to be Mike Trout. You just had to have him be a part of your team because the Dodgers already have a very good team. You already have all-stars on the team. So it was a different look for him because he wasn't playing with a team that's half vets, half rookies, things like that, like he was doing in Baltimore. And Baltimore was never going to be his end. You know, he was always going to be somewhere else. He really wanted to be in New York. He really wanted to be in Boston. But all those years of playing those teams in the NL East, they got a bad taste in their mouth about Manny Machado. So they all pretty much passed. They stalled him out. And then I always felt like he kind of left the White Sox hanging because the White Sox would have been a good spot to land at because they'd have gave you the same worship that you're getting in San Diego, but then you're still playing in a big market. But then that means that's more pressure. So Manny Machado made this decision to play in San Diego because he likes the state of California. He likes Southern California. But he said, where can I go somewhere I can chill at when I lose a game? And they ain't going to get mad at me about it. And they're not going to put me in the news about it. San Diego, a place that was dying for a superstar. And they were willing to give up $330 million to sign him. I honestly would have passed on something like that. Well, $300 million to sign him. What was 8 years, right? And we all know and how San Diego is. They'll have this contract for the next 4 or 5 seasons. And then they'll figure out a way to get a shipload of prospects from some team that has a top 5 farm system and go ahead and get Manny Machado over there, probably in the same situation the Orioles did for a team that is chasing a ring. It's that simple, man. I don't think that they're going to keep up with this contract as long as people think they are. I think that it's a 5-year deal, to be that honest with you. And it is really literally a 5-year deal because he can opt out in the 5th year from what I'm hearing. Or is it the 4th year? Oh, well, he got to opt out. You know, he has Bryce Harper doesn't have an opt out. Bryce Harper has we can trade you when we feel like it. But I think the Philly affair is going to be good for the next 4 or 5 seasons. And then they're going to be expecting championships. You know, and that's no fault of Bryce's. It's just that Philly is going all in to compete in an NL West that is very, very winnable at this point. There is no dominant team in that division anymore. Like, it's anybody's division. You saw last year the Braves won it. So, this season, you don't know who's going to win. I know Mets fans are saying, it should be us, but you're not good enough. Even though they're 13-10 right now, they're playing in a league where they're playing in a division where all the teams are a game and a half out of it, except for the Marlins, who are 7-16, pretty much the worst record in baseball. And they're a team that probably wins maybe once or twice a week at this point. It's an absolute dumpster fire in Miami right now. You know, they only have Marlins man out there supporting them anymore. Why? Because he got blocked by the front office. They said no more season tickets for Marlin man. No fan is bigger than the team. Man, this guy kept your team relevant. I don't care. Don't nobody care about the Marlins unless they play in a World Series or playing in the playoffs. Seriously, the Marlins are one of the most under-radar sports franchises I've ever seen, even with 2 World Championships. This is nuts. You know, and they were able to get those World Championships against 2 of the most dominant teams in the history of baseball, which is crazy. But they did it the first time around, they did it with the team that was, you know, a bunch of former All-Stars and things like that, and some young pups that were pretty good. Then they did it with a bunch of young players. And then some guys who were good, but they weren't really seen as being really good players at that point until they won that World Series, like Mike Lowell, you know, and he was able to go on and get a good deal from Boston and do some big things with them as well, too. So I like what Jeter is doing, but I think that the Marlins fans might not have that much patience, but they should have patience. The team's been there for almost 30 years, and the only time they've been really successful is those two World Series championships. So if you can say the only times you were successful and a ring came out of it, you're doing a good job. That's all I can say. You're doing a very good job. And I always give them props because they won that ring four years after they were an expansion team. Well, they were still an expansion team, but it was like 4 years in and they were already world champions. You know, Colorado wish they had the same luck as you because they've had better teams than the Marlins over the years. They've actually tried to win their division for the last decade. So, you know, but the scouting departments for those teams are awesome because they always figure out how to find some really good, great young talent. And really, it's because you're always in the top 10 of your draft. But, you know, they develop them so well, and then they get these guys these big, huge monster deals when they trade them or when they don't resign them. You know, and it's crazy, man. And then the Cardinals are back up top. They're 14-9 right now. The Pirates 12-9. Cubs 11-10. Cubs are much better than they were because they started the season off absolutely horrid. It's terrible the way that the Cubs started the season. And well, look at here. The team that you expect to be in last place is in last place, Cincinnati. And then the Giants, once again, it doesn't matter. The Giants are back in last place. Once again, they're 10-14 right now. With Colorado being 10-14, but those teams are getting better. They really are. And they started off the season in bad shape, but they're getting it together. Because, you know, the Giants walked into some divisional games to start the season, and it wasn't good for them. They had to start the weekend off in San Diego. Then they played the Dodgers and only were able to win one out of four games in that series. So it puts them in a peculiar situation. You know, are they going to be able to make some moves this year to move forward? Or are they going to just be middling like they were last year? Hopefully try to win like 75 games. I know the Dodgers need them. I know they do. Because the Dodgers are getting mighty bored, but the Dodgers are looking to win their seventh division title in a row right now. So this has been a great run if you're a Dodger fan, division-wise. Seriously, it has. Where you can just wake up in the morning and know that your team has a very, very strong possibility of making the playoffs in a 162-game season, to be exact. And this is not even factoring in injuries, anything like that, because the Dodgers are so deep that if somebody gets hurt, they have somebody that can fill in right away. Their problem is the bullpen. They got to find a middle relief that's going to be able to back them up. Wow. Nick Bosa had a lot of things to say about certain individuals, like Kaepernick's the Cloud, Beyonce's worst album ever, GOATs. Wow. Black Panther, worst Marvel movie of all time. I'm only talking about this because I'm about to get into the draft, but wow, that's pretty ugly right there. Well, but you know, kid speaking his mind, you know, everybody can have an opinion, you know what I mean? But my thing is you gotta choose how you say it. Are we doing this in the form of
I'm feeling good, I'm feeling great. It's your boy, The Primetime Kappa Pop DiBiase. And you guys need to listen to my show, The Primetime Angles Radio Show, which is available live Thursday through Monday, starting at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And you don't know where we might be. Vegas, L.A., Houston, New York, Miami, We do this show everywhere, mobile, but this is all about cashing that ticket. So if you are a big bettor or a small bettor and you like to bet college basketball, NBA, NFL, college football, MLB, WNBA, anything that you can bet under the sun, we'll have an angle for you, okay? So make sure you guys do tune in to the Primetime Angles radio show hosted by your boy, the Primetime Kappa Pop DiBiase, also featuring Jeff Dawson, Philly Pete, Bobby Del Rio, and many more guests that come in on a weekly basis. So you guys make sure to tune in, because this is the best sports betting show in the world. Once again, the best sports betting show in the world. Don't miss out. And this is the Primetime Angles radio show live every Thursday through Monday starting at 7 p.m. Pacific time.
Sorry about that. Phone call came in. I have it on Do Not Disturb. But let's go ahead and stop my recording. But we're back. So we got two pots. And I'm about to go for about another 15 minutes or so. Maybe 15, 20 minutes. But now it's time to talk about the draft. I just wanted to go ahead and... I know I didn't break down any baseball games for you or anything like that, betting-wise, because I don't have a line yet because it's still early. It's like just hitting almost 1 o'clock here in Los Angeles. So let's get back down to it though. Nick Bosa. He's a guy I wasn't really ever high on at Ohio State. I thought he was just a player that was playing within the system with other great defensive players at Ohio State. And that's what I said the other day on the show with Nate Wall. And I just want to elaborate a little bit more, especially after seeing these tweets. I don't see great things coming for Nick Bosa at all, because his brother kind of had the same situation going into the NFL as well too, where he had some controversial things, but that wasn't for tweets. It was because how he hit quarterbacks and how he said he didn't care about quarterbacks if he hurt them, blase blase. And I loved it because he's a defender, and as a defensive pass rusher, you have to have that mentality. You have to, you seriously, it's kill or be killed in the NFL. People get so upset about this thing. Like, why are they doing this? Well, literally, they're trying to win a game. And if they see a player that gives that team an advantage, they're trying to get that player out the game. That's a part of the strategy as well, too. It sucks, but it is what it is. It's war. That's what it is. So if you can take the lieutenant out, then the soldiers fall, right? That's what you're trying to do. So you guys have to understand it's a nasty game, but it's an even nastier game when you don't know how to act off the field. And I'm not saying that he has bad behavior or anything like that, but his choice of words in a public forum are very poor. But this was a kid who was about 18, 19 years old when he was talking like this. And so he's talking from how all these teenagers and young people talk. They're going to have opinions that do not agree with everybody because they're in this anti-mode, right? But people were specifically looking at it because it looks like it was for more things geared towards black people, like Beyonce, Black Panther, which is now the all-time biggest movie in black history. Literally, like, everybody loves that movie. Everybody loves the movie, though. Any race of people loves that movie. It's probably the most creative Marvel movie you'll ever see in your life. You know what I mean? It's probably the only one that actually has a storyline that you want to keep following. You want to see more and more of it, right? But to be dead honest with you, though, I thought it was a good movie. But I'm not going to say it was the best Marvel movie of all time. It was the most creative. But you know, I won't say it's the worst movie of all time like he did. That's just, you know, blatant, because you know the pride that went into the movie. So that's why it just upsets people a little bit that he said that, right? And then it's funny that you got the Twitter police that love to go all the way back into your file and go find these things that you said. Nobody checked you on this stuff when you were just up and coming high school phenom going to college. Nobody cared. So they care today because you're about to be put into a position where you're about to be a billionaire. So you got to watch what you say in the past. But the thing is, though, it seems like every year we run into a player that said some foul tweets or something like that when they were like 16 years old. They're kids. They don't know what they're saying. They don't know what they're talking about. They're just trying to get retweets and likes. That's it. Is, you know, instant gratification. That's what me and Jeff talk about all the time. That's what I talk about a lot of times in business meetings that I have with potential investors and business partners that I have as well, too. So that's what the world's looking for, is instant gratification. So when you're able to say something controversial, it gets a lot of attention, right? It gets a lot of attention right away. But you have to be somebody for that to get a lot of attention. Now, if you're a nobody saying it, nobody cares. But once you're about to become a millionaire, one of the faces of the new faces of the NFL, oh, we bringing up everything because we got to see if you can even be in a locker room with people. And, you know, this pretty much has ended careers of players in the NFL over the last half decade or so with, you know, racist, is what they say, racist comments. You know what I mean? But I haven't seen Nick Bosa stop anybody of color from renting an apartment or anything like that. I haven't seen him put up a sign to say that people aren't welcome here. So there's just shades and points of, you know, that maybe we might be getting a little bit too sensitive about this because the guy had an opinion. But I really do truly think that he didn't mean to drive it towards African Americans, but it's the writing's on the wall. It's like you're very disappointed in what they're doing. So it's going to give everybody this idea that you don't like them very much, right? So he's going to have to spend a whole lot of time apologizing and saying he's not that guy, and he's not racist or anything like that. But you know what? You said what you said. You go ahead, you live with it, and you go ahead and try to become a great NFL player. Because all in all, that's what they're going to judge you on. This stuff will be swept up under the rug after a year or two. It always is. But if you're not successful, they're going to always bring this up and say that was the reason why your career never went off the way it was supposed to go. And I wish Nick Bosa well. I don't shame any athlete because I know the time and effort it takes to become an elite, superb athlete in professional sports. And that's all what really matters. But character is a huge part in the NFL nowadays. They can get all types of talented players to come in and play for them. Thing is, though, they got to have high character guys. And right now, Nick Bosa has low character. He's a guy, I felt like he quit on his team with the abductor injury that he had. He could have played in the bowl game, but he's more worried about making millions of dollars on Sundays because they've already guaranteed this to him. What I think what they're going to do to him is that now he's not going to be a top five pick because now they can go ahead and dissect things. And he'll probably be picked in the top 15 or so. But knowing how I'm talking, he'll be picked in the top three, most likely. But from looking at this mock draft board, I see that Kyler Murray is the consensus on a lot of these unofficial draft orders that he'll be the number one pick. Arizona's already came out and said that they will not be picking him number one. But that doesn't matter. We heard teams say this before. They're just saying this now to give everybody an idea that, hey, they'll go ahead and get this lineman. But from what I'm hearing right now is that Nick Bosa is a lock to San Francisco. But if, say, the Cardinals change their plans a little bit, would they look at a Kyler Murray? Would they try to trade back? Something of that nature. If Kyler Murray's not taking number one and Nick Bosa's taking number one. But I doubt Nick Bosa's going to be taking number one because what just came out. So I'm hearing grumblings that that's their guy because they're looking for a ferocious defensive end. But I would say Ed Oliver is probably the best defensive lineman in this draft. He just went to Houston. And he was actually graded to go number one at a point during the season last year. So pretty much what they've been saying all year last year and this year is that the defensive end is the premium position in this year's draft. And quarterbacks are more looking as developmental backup for a year or two. That's how we're looking at the quarterbacks coming into this year. Nobody's rushing any of these quarterbacks to be the starter of the team, if you noticed it. Giants fans are hoping for Dwayne Haskins just so they know that they got a rookie who's capable on the sideline. But knowing the Giants, they feel like they can still wait. That's the whole thing. The Giants feel like they can still wait on the quarterback that they want to pick, not the quarterback that you want to put on their team. Last year, you wanted to put Josh Rosen on the team. Josh Rosen would have been a big, big distraction in a team that already had millions of distractions last season. So that was good that they didn't get Josh Rosen, because they would have tried to turn this into the same situation they did with Kurt Warner. And you just can't bump Eli from that spot. He has a lot of commitment from the New York Giants organization. He delivered two titles. So he's literally untouchable. He's their Sinatra. He's their Jeter. He leaves when he wants to leave. That's how the Giants feel. They don't care what you think. They don't care what you say. They know that he is their quarterback, because without him, they can't do much. Even with him getting longer in the tooth, him getting older, him not being as consistent as he was. Well, when was he ever really consistent? But he's always been a top game manager, a elite game manager, and that's why he's able to do what he does. That's why he's able to keep winning games. That's why he's able to lead game winning drives. And you just don't want to lose that if you're the Giants. So that's why it's maybe they draft a quarterback early, maybe they don't. But the consensus, the Giants fans, not the front office, they are hell bent on bringing in the new quarterback for the future. It's just so enticing. It's the premier position in all of football. So everybody just is really like, we gotta get him. So my thing is like this: you have to put yourself in the shoes of the offensive coordinator, head coach, and see exactly where you want your team to go this season. And I think the Giants might have a chance to go for the East this year. Beckham was only one player, but they already had a pretty deep receiving core. That's why it wasn't hard for them to trade him. You know, and they know that they're doing the best thing for them, because Odell is a beast. Odell is a prominent player. He is awesome. Biggest problem with Odell, though, is that he's just a guy that is larger than life, and it fits the New York mold, but it didn't fit this New York team mold. Now, if he's on the Jets love this type of stuff because it sells tickets. Giants couldn't go for it because they want to be behind their head coach. And the head coach and Beckham never saw eye to eye, ever. And I don't blame him. Pat Shurmur is a below average coach, in my opinion. And he's a great coordinator, but he's not a great head coach. And we've seen it. And I think that by him alienating Beckham at times, it was detrimental to the team, because Beckham did have some say in that locker room, and he always wanted to win. It wasn't, you know, if you wanting to win a football game is annoying, then hey, trade the guy. Because that means that you're not dedicated to winning games. And that's what he was trying to really throw out there about his situation with the Giants. So I just feel like the Giants need to make the right choice. They take the best player on the board. And if it's an offensive lineman, do it. Don't force yourself to get a quarterback if you're not ready to get a quarterback. But if they are able to get the kid from Jersey, that's where Haskins is from, that would be incredible. And then Ohio State looks to get, what, two top picks out the top 10 this year, maybe three. And once again, it's a job well done, Urban Meyer. Great recruiting. And, you know, this draft is going to be one of those drafts where a lot of these guys are going to be workmen. They're going to be players on rosters that are going to be doing, that are going to help these teams move forward. But I don't see any superstars. I don't see any Hall of Famers. I see guys that are going to be very, very adequate to their situations. Now, there could be a Hall of Famer in this group. Of course, there's going to be Pro Bowlers in this group as well, too. But right now, I just see a lot of workmen in this group. I see a lot of guys that have little college experience, but they were so good in college that you got to get them to the NFL now so you don't get them hurt in college, right? But Haskins would have been okay staying one more year at Ohio State. It would have been detrimental to his draft status. It actually would have upped his draft status a little bit. But, you know, you're getting a new coach and everything like that this year, even though it's a coach that's been an assistant for the last decade or so with Meyer. But it doesn't matter. It's a new coach. It's a new look. And I think Haskins just told himself that it's better for me to go get this money right now because they're telling me that I can be picked early. And they do this a lot with players, man. I've seen it happen, man. I've seen guys who were supposed to go in the second, third round, they'll get picked to the sixth, seventh round because some scout and some agent said that they'll be a high draft pick. Now, these teams have different ideas. They'll evaluate you. They'll look at you. They'll love you. They'll say you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And then they'll go draft the guy at your same position that you feel like that you're better than. But he fits something in their system that you don't. There's nothing wrong with that because they're evaluating talent and they're picking the guys they feel like are best for their roster, you know. And then when you're an undrafted free agent, you really are trying to get on a roster. But a lot of times you're gonna get 5-6 teams that want you on their team that didn't draft, but it always comes down to the money. And that's why the undrafted free agents literally have like a better pool of things because they get to choose the team that they play for. So if they were great in college but they had some red flags coming in, you know, a lot of times those guys wind up making the team because now they know that this is their last chance. There's nothing else they can do but go on and win this game. Win this spot. Even if it's to be the third string cornerback, you know, the dime back, whatever, fourth receiver, kickoff returner, it doesn't matter. They're gonna put their all their gusto into it to get that spot. And we've been seeing some really good undrafted free agents over the last few years. But these guys were already studs in college. But there was just something wrong with the measurables somewhere down the road. And that's why these guys were pretty much overlooked. But there were teams that did like their style, but I won't say waste a draft pick on them. They just didn't feel like they needed to invest a draft pick on that player. Most players that get drafted are players that already are set in stone to be picked somewhat until you get down to about the sixth, seventh round, you know. And that's when they start getting tricky. That's when they start getting, sometimes they get guys that they know that they're going to draft that probably won't make the team. But then they got the undrafted free agents. These are guys that are about to fill the need that they were really needing to fill. See, what you're doing in drafts most times, you're taking the best talent on the board, right? But you've already evaluated that talent. You say that talent should be able to help your team out. But say when you got a running back issue and you say to yourself, well, we drafted two running backs, but we signed two more rookie running backs because you want to see what those other guys have to offer, but there's just not enough spots to select everybody. Now, back in the day when the draft was like 12, 20 rounds, all these guys would have got picked, you know. But then when you get a guaranteed contract, or, you know, are you just going to be a guy that comes in and you're a part of the roster for a month? So they had to cut that away It just make it a better, stronger pool for the undrafted free agents, which was smart. And I do feel like with the draft this year, you got guys that are just going to be really, really good if they get the right fit. Now, if you don't get the right fit, some of these guys won't be in the league longer than 5 years. You know, because the NBA, the NFL is a recycled league, pretty much. You're going to get players that do the same exact thing that superstar does. It doesn't matter. I know that we idolize and you can't do much without that one player, but NFL is the ultimate team game. So you can have somebody step in. Like when Gurley got hurt with the Rams, boom, they were able to get their backup to come in and not miss a beat. And then he literally got most of the carries in the Super Bowl this year. So it goes to show you the NFL is really, really talented. And there's a lot of really great players in the league already. And that's why it makes it tough for you to say, let's have a farm league. Because the farm league, to me, is preseason. And once you, those 40-some-odd guys who are cut off your team, okay, now you got your best 53. But the thing is, though, you still got those guys' phone numbers. So if they haven't been signed yet, and you liked what you saw, maybe that guy might get a call back week four. Because there's the injury list in the NFL is at least minimum 10 players on it. It doesn't matter if they're probable or they got a slight injury. They got an injury that has been reported, you know. And I've seen it to where guys have had 20 players on the injury report. And, you know, 15 of them play. But still, you have to always look at that factor. Who's dinged up? Who's banged up? And this opens the door up for opportunities for the players who missed out in the preseason to get an opportunity to be on an actual live NFL roster. Or make it to the practice squad to where you can still be a viable asset. Especially guys who play for the Patriots. They put a lot of guys on the practice squad that came and played for the team the next season and became Pro Bowlers. So, well, maybe not Pro Bowlers, but they played at a Pro Bowl level. So, you tell yourself, it's not about who's picking these guys. It's about where they fit, you know? And Kyler Murray's such a conundrum because they only feel like he fits on the Cardinals because they got a coach who seems to be a risk taker. And he seems to be a risk taker at quarterback and a risk taker in his whole decision on professional sports. Because baseball is safe money. It's guaranteed money. NFL, you go out there, you break your neck, contract gone. You know, Bo still had baseball when he broke his hip. Vanguard, they're like, well, if Bo already swings from his upper body as is, how much does he need his hip? He still hit, I think, over 100 home runs with a bad hip because he played, another 5-6 years? Because I know he played for the White Sox for a bit, and he ended it with the Angels, which was fun. That was fun watching Bo play for the Angels. So we look at it and we say, this year's draft should be one for the books. And it's going to be great because it's going to be on my birthday. So you can only expect really good things to happen for teams that feel like they're one player away, you know. And I'm not going to say they're Hall of Famers or anything like that, but I'm just going to say that they're going to be very viable assets. And that's what it looks like in this draft to me. So with that, I'm going to go ahead in today's show on that note. We'll be back tomorrow live from Las Vegas after the press conferences and all that good stuff. After, you know, I do my meet and greets and everybody wishes me, shows me some birthday love and everything like that. You know, I'm not expecting it, but I know it's coming, you know. So pretty much we'll be back tomorrow. We'll have Jeff Dawson with us as well, too. I look forward to it. We got a whole lot to talk about. And since we'll have the draft going, we will be able to break down some of these picks that go to your favorite team. So make sure you tune in tomorrow night live on 12 Ounce Sports Radio, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern. and you guys will be able to listen to the premier sports betting radio show. Yep, I said it. I've been doing it for years. Put your money where your mouth is, and that's what we're going to do today, you know, pretty much if you're a client, you know. And I'm going to go ahead and see about throwing out a quick pick six for you guys in baseball today as well, too, on the Twitter. So you guys make sure to retweet that as well, all right? So I thank you guys so much for listening to the show today. And you guys have a beautiful one, and we'll be back to you tomorrow, 7 p.m. Pacific time, live on 12 Ounce Sports Radio and on the Anchor app. And this is the Primetime Angles Radio Show, hosted by your boy, the Primetime Capper, Pop DiBiase.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. It's your boy, the Primetime Kappa Pop DiBiase. And you guys need to listen to my show, the Primetime Angles Radio Show, which is available live Thursday through Monday, starting at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And you don't know where we might be. Vegas, L.A., Houston, New York, Miami. We do this show everywhere, mobile, but this is all about cashing that ticket. So if you are a big bettor or a small bettor and you like to bet college basketball, NBA, NFL, college football, MLB, WNBA, anything that you can bet under the sun, we'll have an angle for you, okay? So make sure you guys do tune in to the Primetime Angles Radio Show, hosted by your boy, the Primetime Kappa Pop DiBiase, also featuring Jeff Dawson, Philly Pete, Bobby Del Rio, and many more guests that come in on a weekly basis. So you guys make sure to tune in, because this is the best sports betting show in the world. Once again, the best sports betting show in the world. Don't miss out. And this is the Primetime Angles Radio Show, live every Thursday through Monday, starting at 7 p.m. Pacific time.